everybody. Thank you. Take it away.
Good morning, councillors. Again, Oliver Jacob, for the record, Community Planning Director. I think this work session segment is a good one, following the early conversation on the framework plan. I say so because capital facilities planning is always the key on how, not only on how we grow, but on how do we pay as we grow. This work session is up and holding. I think what we are going to do is just provide the council an overview of the urban holding and how it is used in Clark County. Matt Herman in my shop will be giving the presentation, and at one point I'm going to step away and have Heath Anderson sit up here to answer some of the questions that you may have relating to transportation. That's who we're going to be working with in the future as this conversation continues. Matt?
Sure. So this work session comes from a request in May during a board time request. Following my presentation, Reed Stapleton and Steve Hornstein will be presenting on the Three Creeks development. So there's a couple of things in front of you at your desk. One is the presentation. The two other ones are a blown-up map of the 179th Street urban holding area. This was requested from Councillor Stewart. It's just the same map that's in the PowerPoint presentation, but a little bit bigger so you can get a frame of where the streets are. And then the second piece is the previous map of the previous urban holding areas that have been lifted. So as Albert discussed, we're going to be beginning with a broad overview of urban holding, moving on to how it's applied in Clark County, and then finally discussing the details of the 179th Street urban holding area. So the sixth page. So within the five small cities of Clark County, there are several urban holding areas. Obviously, those urban holding areas are outside of the city limits, but within the urban growth boundary of those cities.
And as Matt will get into, for the smaller cities, unlike the Vancouver UGA, the smaller cities, the urban holding comes off through annexation.
Yeah.
That's required for the smaller cities.
I'll touch on that a little bit. We have one area in the Vancouver urban growth boundary that has urban holding on it, and this is in the 179th Street area. This has both urban holding 10 and urban holding 20. I'll get into the particulars of the difference between 10 and 20. But this is the last piece within our Vancouver urban growth boundary that we as the county can live. So oftentimes urban holding and urban reserve are confusing. They sometimes are used interchangeably, but are drastically different in terms of the technical. Urban holding areas are within the urban growth boundary. Urban reserve areas are outside of the urban growth boundary. Urban holding areas have urban zoning, whereas urban reserve areas have rural zoning. Both of the areas, the urban holding has urban services, but those urban services aren't in place, which is why urban holding exists.
I have a question before you
sure.
go on, because I want to refer back to this map.
Yeah.
You're saying that this North Orchard's urban holding area has been lifted?
Correct.
And it's part of Vancouver?
Correct. That was further on in the presentation.
Okay, sorry.
In 2010.
Trying to get my
hand in. And oftentimes when urban reserve areas, when the UGB is expanded to include those urban reserve areas, that urban holding is placed on those lands. So as urban holding exists in Clark County, we use it as a tool to phase development. It's areas that we've said have been, that are inside the urban growth area and are ready for development, but the infrastructure doesn't exist yet, and we're waiting for that infrastructure to occur. There's a common misconception that urban holding areas are a place of where there's a moratorium. That's not the case. Within our development code, we specifically have uses that can be placed on those lands and permitted outright. It's the parcelization that's the issue when it comes to urban holding. So the three main services that are needed for urban holding to be lifted are transportation, sewer, and water. Transportation is the one service that Clark County is responsible for. The other two, water is provided by CPU, as well as sewer, in most cases, by Clark Regional Wastewater Facility. The other services are schools and so on, but the main three that we're considering when going through the process of lifting urban holding are water, sewer, and transportation facilities.
Is this... Is the conditions of this urban holding spelled out in the comp plan like our others?
Yes. There's specific procedures that are distinct in the comprehensive plan. And some of those areas have specific conditions, but in broad terms, those facilities have to be, those infrastructure facilities related to transportation have to be reasonably funded.
And are them specifics in this 179?
Yeah. The specifics in the 179 I'll cover.
Okay.
But yeah, it revolves around transportation.
Yeah.
So in simple terms, the difference between Urban Holding 10 and Urban Holding 20, Urban Holding 10 applies to residential uses. Urban Holding 20 applies to non-residential uses. So zones that you might see in the Urban Holding 20 may include mixed use, office residential, light industrial, as well as office industrial and some commercial uses. But Urban Holding 10 is where the residential is. So in previous years, we've lifted urban holding. Most recent one coming in Fifth Plain Creek area. The map in front of you today kind of details where those locations are. In 2010, we went through two different urban holding lifts, one for the North Orchards area. This was north of 119th area along the border of SR 503. The Pleasant Valley is north of 119th, east of 50th Avenue, west of 72nd Avenue, and south of 139th Avenue. And this area is seeing lots of development now as we've lifted it recently. Okay. Specifically for lifting urban holding, within those small cities that I detailed earlier, annexation happens. Those areas cannot be lifted without annexation when it's within the smaller cities' UGAs. Within the Vancouver UGA, we have different criteria. That is spelled out in the comprehensive plan. That calls for completion of the localized critical links and the intersection improvements that are reasonably funded, as shown on the six-year transportation improvement program, or through development agreements. Those development agreements have been applied in both the Fifth Plain Creek area as well as the North Orchards Urban Holding area. Those were lifted as part of development agreements. And then also there's a generic covenant that goes on the land that indicates the property owner is willing to support annexation should the city provide those urban services. So specifically within the 179th Street urban holding area, we start with this process to lift urban holding. It begins with your direction, your addition of the task to be included in our annual comp plan amendment process, specifically as part of the docket request. After that occurs, we send a 60-day notification to the Department of Commerce so that they're aware of the, and that is a part of the GMA requirements. And then typically what happens is a third party, if transportation is the main issue, a third party study occurs where we detail the impacts and how those impacts can be mitigated. If a developer's agreement is the process with which we're using to lift urban holding, then we have a legal agreement that's required or that's necessary to show that that infrastructure will be provided as development occurs. The public outreach is then the next step. We go to the neighborhood association and hold an open house where we collect comments. We then move on to our regular CEPA process and then to both the Planning Commission work session and hearing, and then on to you for final approval. A work session comes before your public hearing so that you can get more details and iron out the issues for the hearing. We move back to the 179th Street. No, go back to the map. So this area, in 2008, you'll see those hash lines on there. Those hash lines are proposed roads, and all there was a circulation plan that was adopted by the board in 2008. That circulation plan was for urban roads, not rural roads. The reason why we were able to plan for that, those urban roads in that area, was because prior to that, in 2007, we expanded the UGA to include this area. If the UGA wasn't expanded, we wouldn't be able to plan for those urban roads. So that's one of the important, I guess, advantages of being within an urban holding, is we're able to plan for those urban services before the development occurs rather than at the same time or concurrently when the parcelization is occurring. Currently, we have the 10th Avenue overcrossing over Whipple Creek in construction, and then within our TIP, our 15th Avenue extension that goes from 179th and the 15th Avenue intersection all the way up to the 10th Avenue. This is on the east side of 179th. In the capital facilities plan, we have several intersections of 179th planned for improvements that occurs in the 179th and 29th Avenue and 179th and 50th Avenue. Those are in our capital facilities plan. And the Delfell Road realignment is a part of the 179th. With that said, if there's any questions that I can answer, I'd be happy to.
Just a quick question. Okay. So when we looked at this, this map that we have up there now, and how old was this map again? I'm sorry.
This was adopted in 2008 with the urban holding was placed on the area in 2007, but the streets and the circulation plan was approved in 2008.
Okay. So during that time when we were looking at this circulation plan, was there much consideration done with regard to habitat, wetlands, topography, potential salmon runs, anything like that that we're dealing with today?
Not today, no. The plan was developed for transportation circulation purposes. It accounted for obviously the connection over Whipple Creek on 10th Avenue, but not the environmental constraints that we're finding.
I know there's a request that we mentioned about a process for lifting urban holding. It's only a portion of this that's being looked at for being requested for this year. Is that correct?
Yes, and I believe, as Mr. Hornsby will get up here, the request was for a specific portion of this area to be lifted, not the entire 179.
And that was in, talk about it. It's kind of like the southern portion of what's that.
Yeah, so
the employment land, essentially, right?
Where
that 15,000.
I don't want to preempt their conversation, but with the Three Creeks area, there's a developer's agreement that occurs on the land that's not in urban holding. They have purchased property on the north side of the 115th Avenue extension that is in urban holding and is zoned mixed use.
So back to the circulation plan and that particular area. These are mapped out, but are they carved in stone?
They're not. In 1999, the board signed an ordinance that basically says that the alignment of the proposed roads can vary. The issue we have when we vary land is we don't want to put it on a property owner that's unaware of the changes. So in general, the alignment can change if it stays on the same property that it is now, but when it gets to impacting residents that have adjacent property, that's when we feel that the need is necessary to go out to that individual and have a public process so that they're aware of that, the impact.
Yeah.
My question is, when we take a area out of urban holding, as in Fifth Lane Creek, we justify that the intersections were reasonably funded. That was before the loophole. So the question I have is, if we deem that this is reasonably funded for around 179, how do we then say it's limited, that it's reasonably funded for a limited area,
yeah,
when we've made the whole area? Unless we say it's reasonably funded if you have a developer's agreement, and then
right,
the other people, if they have a developer's agreement, they're in party two or
so. Specifically,
know,
within this area, it's capacity constraints that have us on urban holding at the 179th interchange. If it's limited to a specific area in, we would have to make the justification that the trips from the area that's being lifted, the only area that's being lifted, will not have negative impacts on the 179th area, or they'll be mitigated as a part of that. So that's where that third-party consultation comes into play.
Oh, okay.
And that analysis that allows us, as both the private side and the public side, to come to a conclusion as far as the capacity will be mitigated as far as in order to lift the urban holding. As far as the determination of it being reasonably funded, we regularly consult with Public Works and the Transportation Improvement Program to make that determination and have that determination come from both our departments. So there's continuous coordination that matters.
Okay.
All right, with that said, I'll introduce Reed Stapleton
Councilors, good morning. For the record, Steve Hornstein, and to my right is Reed Stapleton. You know Reed as a planner with Berger Avan in Vancouver for many years. He's now with Dowell, another very large regional firm like Berger Avan. And we heard a lot about the macro side of the urban holding. We're here to talk about the micro side of the transportation issues in what's called the Three Creeks area there, the 179. I want to first thank Keith and Susan Wilson and their team. This is another one that we haven't had for a while, but this is turning out to be a great public-private partnership to solve serious transportation issues right in that area where there is potential for one of the remaining areas where there's potential for residential and there's potential for quite a few jobs in that area, thousands of jobs in that area. What we're going to do is show you the work that's been done on the private side in conjunction with Heath, not only by our client, Killian Pacific, that does own property. You can see it on your map there. It's the two white squares, one larger than the other, that are owned by Killian Pacific for mixed-use development. And the question about the urban holding area, which piece are we talking about? It's the hatch piece on the very north of those boxes there. Okay, the rest of that, the Killian property, is out of urban holding. Our other partner on this project has been Holt Homes, Randy Prince and Randy Rutherford are here today, available to answer questions and provide comments that you, if you have concerns. They own about 150 acres down in the vicinity of 50th and 179th and moving west, and major potential for housing there put together by Holt Homes. So we've all been hard at it. We hope we're getting close to the end. This has been a several-year process, it seems. And we'd like to present to you what we have so far.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, members of council. Again, my name is Reed Stapleton. I'm a land use planner. I work with a firm called Dowell. We've worked with Lance Killian for many, many years on a number of his projects all over Vancouver and the Portland area. And I've been involved in this particular property for at least 5 or 6 years as Lance has continued to acquire properties here. And his assemblage, you can see it here represented in white. He currently has about 130 acres under contract or in ownership. And Commissioner Bold, I think you're asking about the particular area that is subject to the urban holding request, and that is that northern area where the arrow is right now. It's about 40 acres, and it is in the urban holding 10 zone that Matt mentioned. I won't belabor the slide, but really it does kind of cut to the essence of why we're here. You can see the employment zoning, and obviously the employment zoning and the desire to have a really thriving economic engine here in North County is really what makes this improvement such a significant and important investment from all the parties who are involved. So on this one, Steve, did you want to talk about that? There's several elements in motion here, and I'll let Steve speak to this one in particular.
So as you can see, we're dovetailing what we call the on-interchange improvements with what we also call the off-interchange improvements. We have to get it all figured out for this area to really work. And what we're after is to declare this area reasonably funded. Let me be crystal clear about that. That's the goal, because for the developers to make their contribution, they have to know they can go forward. So reasonably funded are the buzzwords. In addition to the process we're talking to you about, the county has taken the lead with WDOT, or for WDOT, I should say, on the newly required practical design process for building the interchange. The interchange is today not funded till the 2023-2025 biennium. We've made some efforts to pull some of that money this direction. It's not going as well as we would like, but there may be some coming this year. that would be tantamount to moving some of that money forward, and I don't know the status of that. We should know that pretty soon, I guess. Yeah, it's in the capital budget process. So that's going along, and at the same time, we are looking at a phasing plan for this entire area, which Reed is going to go through in some detail here. Also going along at that same time is in the annual review process this year is a piece that would just take that northern piece of the Killian property, the rest of which is not in urban holding, out of urban holding. And the quid pro quo, for lack of a better term for that, is the extension of 15th Avenue as it comes off 10th and goes north and curves around to the old 10th Avenue to pull all that away from the interchange project itself. Some of that crosses that 40-acre piece that Killian has on the north. So we're trying to figure out with staff how to thread the needle to make that right-of-way available to you and pull that property out of urban holding at the same time. So stay tuned on that. There'll be more to discuss. Also simultaneously, we are working on a program to fund what needs to be funded here to make the off-interchange improvements work. Some of that will come from the two large property owners that we've discussed, Holt and Killian Pacific. There will be a public piece, whether it's bonding or however you choose to do that. This will not happen without public funding, but there's plenty of right-of-way you need and some cash you need, and we're working very hard to figure out how that's going to lay out so that you know what the project is, you know what's being contributed by the private side, and what is left for the public fund. And Killian does have a development agreement that does touch the south piece of his property and has a fair number of trips tied up in that development agreement. It would be easy enough to go ahead and develop, but it will only make things more difficult in the long run there. Killian is trying to be an important partner in this to solve the entire problem before they move forward with development. So we will need the development for the north piece. We'll need to amend our development to include the north property that we own, North 179. Holt will need a development agreement. There may be others, but these are the two that are at the table today. You want to cover the phasing plan and such?
You bet. So would you mind advancing here? So this slide cuts to the chase of what the particular constraints are out here. And really, I think the important thing to understand with this slide is that to a large degree, many of the constraints that are limiting capacity out here are related to county facilities and how they are positioned relative to the interchange. So if you look at Delfell Road and where it intersects with 179th, it's only about 100 feet west of your on-ramps and off-ramps on the west side. So you have queuing and stacking issues in that location. And then if you look on the east side and you look at where 10th Avenue and where Union Road intersect, same thing there. You have turn movements there that conflict with your movements on your on and off ramps. And so when you factor that in, as well as some of the throughput issues on 179th at 15th, where you don't have turn movements, many of the improvements that are needed to open up capacity out here are county facilities that really can be compiled into a discrete local package. And so that's something that we want to show you and work through with staff in the coming months to really, really refine what that discrete local package is and the resources that the stakeholders in the county can bring to bear to make this a reality. So we will obviously be working with county staff to refine what this phasing plan looks like. This is one suggestion and a sequence of potential improvements that we've looked at as a possibility. So I mentioned a couple of the key constraints being those intersections at 10th Avenue and Union Road at 179th. One of the first key things to do is to eliminate those intersections. And that can be done on a near-term basis by providing the corridor improvements on 179th. Those would transition into the ultimate improvements at the interchange and would be the long-term fix that would be a phase one for your 179th corridor. And we can provide on an interim basis a connection via 10th to that central roundabout. That would eliminate the 10th access conflict at 179th. On Union Road, on the south side, Lance and Killian Pacific now control that property at the southeast and have the ability to work with the county on any right-of-way issues and access issues there to eliminate that access and allow for either a connection through the property and up to that central roundabout or coming farther south via 173rd, provide a movement south on Union Road, east on 173rd, and connecting out to 15th Avenue. And Holt Holmes, who's also at the table in this discussion, is in the final process of getting their approvals for a subdivision just south of 173rd. And as a component of that project, they will be making improvements to 173rd that will provide access to 15th Avenue. So there will be at least a two-thirds improvement on 179th that can be completed to complete that connection on 173rd.
How much do they own up to Jolly's? Or?
Killian Pacific has the property up to Jolly's.
Okay.
Yeah. They do not currently own the Brown property, but have been in discussions with them, and that's always been a part of the conversation.
So this extension up to 10th Avenue, is that a temporary? That's not the 15th Avenue.
No, it's not the 15th Avenue connection. We would envision it as a temporary connection that would ultimately be integrated into a site development and become a secondary route through that area and not a direct connection. The ultimate plan is for 15th Avenue to be a minor collector that would bear that primary north-south throughput.
So the work done there then would support further development on that property, the road work that you would be doing there, you'd be building around it essentially then? I mean, you're not going to take it out once you put it in.
No, we wouldn't take it out. It would likely be converted to more of an internal kind of local road network. Okay. Yeah.
And there has been some discussion about not worrying about this internal connection and going right to 15.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes, and we understand that there's some interest on the board's part of doing that, and we're totally open to that.
Yeah.
It's not without its challenges, but we're very willing to, if we could go right to that, so much the better.
Yeah, I think that's very much a possibility. If 15th advances, then we could potentially be at a point where that's not even needed.
Oh, yeah. We can take this money and move it to the larger project.
Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
Next slide.
So what we're calling phase two here is a connection, 15th, what Councillor Olson, you were just mentioning. It would be the extension of 15th Avenue across the tributary to Whipple Creek here, veering to the northwest and dovetailing in with 10th Avenue. And you can see up there where that road clips the property that is in urban holding, and that is part of why that urban holding discussion is so important, is that it allows for more precise land planning and entitlement work in that area to help define those rights of way. And ultimately, that right-of-way and that orientation of that road may influence some of the land use, the locations of land uses. You know, we would envision that ultimately a master plan would be submitted for that property that would basically look at the commercial and mixed-use allowances within that overall aggregated property and, you know, work with the proportions of zoning that we have there, but potentially orient that around the ultimate road orientation. So getting that land planning piece and that entitlement piece in sync with your road design is really critical. We, in this instance, looked at a possibility of having segment of 15th Avenue completed prior to the bridge. We just looked at that because we do know that there will be some environmental permitting required for that crossing. And in the event that for any reason that were to be delayed for any reason, there is still that possibility of that interim connection via the central roundabout. So I think in a perfect world, like Steve was saying, we would look to see that 15th Avenue connection completed in whole. But this phase contemplates a scenario where they are done sequentially. Preliminary cost estimates, and I'll put a very big caveat on this, that these are very high-level estimates. They do include design and permitting and agency review fees. But what we were looking at for this segment was about $4.8 million, with an estimated right-of-way value of about $1.8 million. Understanding, of course, that ultimately at the end of the day, there'd be appraisals to verify all of these things.
So I have maybe a dumb question, but we'll find out. So this 15th Avenue extension that's here is from this 08 map, essentially. And we talked earlier about the fact that when it got on the map, we didn't have any idea of what our environmental constraints were going to be as they are today. I'm just wondering, and we don't have to make that, I'm just wondering what other options we might have in that area other than what's been on the map for 10 years or 9 years to help mitigate the environmental challenges that we're going to have there. And is this the best plan still, given what we're learning about what we might have to go through to do that?
Right. I was going to address that at the end. If you want to, I can do it now, or can
you
wait, whatever you
just
prefer.
That's fine. Either way.
But we'll keep going and allow you to play clean up here. So next slide, please. So this last phase just indicates that the bridge would be completed, and that portion of the realignment, including the bridge, we're estimating between 4.2 and 5.5. We've got a fairly significant range there just because design of that still needs to be determined. There are a number of different options on design that could have a substantial swing in which way that goes. The previous number that we included in phase two for right-of-way included the right-of-way for this segment, so we didn't have a distinct number for right-of-way in this particular estimate. But with this image here, this would address the primary improvements that we would anticipate to be necessary on the east side of the interchange to take 10th Avenue off of 179th, take that intersection off of 179th, take the Union intersection offline, shift those intersections off to the east, get them out of the zone of influence with those interchange termini, and create a better flow pattern through here with your complex. Then, Jose, do you advance? And then this just shows, with the ultimate improvement, when you look at the interchange and the west side of the interchange, what the overall improvement would look like. So this identifies and includes the Delfell Road realignment as envisioned, new ramp termini with roundabouts at the interchange, and then again the elements and improvements on the east side that I've mentioned. And then last one. So what are the next steps? So this is really why we're here, is not just to update you on the work that's been done to date, but identify what we see as the critical next steps. And we've taken kind of a fat pen to this at this point, and we want to get more precise. We want to sharpen our pencils and start to work with the county to really narrow down the design and look at what the funding package looks like, look at the resources that we have to bear, and come up with a funding program and funding strategy. So first step is we've talked with staff, and we're looking to work with staff and develop a working group that would meet regularly over the rest of this year, but in particular a focused effort in the next few months to look at design, look at what resources there are to bear, bring in other agencies. Both CPU and Clark Regional have capital facility improvements that would need to be integrated with this. Those costs were included in those numbers that I mentioned before. Both of those agencies are initiating their capital facilities planning in the next month for the next year. So we want to make sure that we bring them to the table in the near term and a fairly short time frame here so that they prioritize those improvements and get in sync with the hard work that the county's been doing. And then we want to look at the resources that we can bring. And if you look here at this slide, on the private side, the resources are right-of-way control. And you talk about right-of-way control and what a unique situation you have here in that the improvements that I mentioned involve about 10 to 11 acres worth of right-of-way that would be required from the Killian assemblage. So to have that includes storm ponds that would be required for your public improvements. But to have all of that in one ownership is a pretty unbelievable situation and opportunity. And so to have one primary owner who you can work with is an enviable situation when you look at a project of this scale. Site studies and technical support. We have survey, we have some environmental studies, we have a fairly substantial book of work that's been done to date for this area that can be shared and brought to the table to help advance the design. And then when you look at the actual implementation side of this and the construction side, there's off-site mitigation that will likely become conditions of approval of the land use approvals between the Holt development and the Killian approvals. And then there's an opportunity to prepay traffic impact fees, which is something that's been done in the past. And there are questions about that. I know Steve has been intimately involved with those types of situations, but it's an opportunity that could be brought to the table here as well to bring some more cash up front to the implementation. Then on the public side, there's the possibility of bonding. There's the local revitalization finance program that has been adopted for this area that is available, and the possibility of applying for and obtaining grants to put forward to this. And then the thing that I haven't mentioned here would be partnering agencies and resources that they can bring in to help augment the cost related to the utilities. So between all of those, you have a substantial book of assets, so to speak, between the two groups, between the private and the public, and we want to see that come together in a coherent plan. Urban holding, I mentioned, taking the opportunity of this annual review to address the 40 acres at the Killian property will allow for land use entitlement planning in early 2018. So it's an important step to allow for that next step of implementation. And then lastly, after we have that funding program and we hash out kind of in broader terms who's bringing what to the table, we want to develop, prepare and obtain development agreements that memorialize what resources each party is bringing to the table and more precise commitments towards the planning and implementation. So we would hope to have that process completed in November, December of this year.
And I would add a number 4 and 5 to this that I should have thought of before, because they're the most important points from the private sector standpoint, and that is removal of urban holdings, especially for Holt on their end, but that would be number 5. Number 4 would be declare this interchange area reasonably funded. That's the goal here. That's why we're here today. That's what this is all about. And we look forward to working with you, and I think Heath has some comments as well.
So the question I would have is, well, I don't know how many times we've looked at everything in the world for this. So reasonably funded sounds good, but reasonably funded doesn't sound good if it doesn't work.
Right.
So I think one thing is that we need to know it works, because if it looks real pretty, you know, Julia and all her neighbors is going to use that. It'll be set for 2 miles, you know. So we need to know peer trips, too. And that's what really started this in the first place, is regional stormwater and trips, you know, for a long time.
Well, we agree with you, and that's why we're putting in the effort and why Killian and Holt are spending the money they're spending to get to that point.
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to keep our eye on the goal.
Yeah. I'm glad.
Yeah, I thought I'd just kind of summarize where we are with the overall transportation. You know, I think just kind of backing up a little bit, and they alluded to this as well, but obviously I think we all were kind of counting on the state funding package that's out there in the early 2020s to get accelerated or moved up in order to kind of accelerate this whole project in combination with the interchange. Obviously that funding was not moved up. So given that, the county is currently funding an initial work that's required as part of that funding, we're basically working with WashDOT and paying for their services to help us through the practical design process, which is basically looking at a multitude of alternatives around the interchange and some of what you saw as being reviewed as part of that process. They expect to be done with that near the end of this year with a preferred concept, and then move that into design, at least early design, next year. So there's really, and now I think what we're finding with this proposal is kind of looking at it from two different, so you kind of have the interchange project, and that's taking its path, and then you have this potentially separate project where we want to decouple some of this work from the interchange to find out what will it take, what design is required in order to adequately move the traffic around to be able to lift urban holding, and then how do we fund it and actually declare it reasonably funded. So we have, and some other things that we've learned, and obviously there's an interconnect between those two processes because they're going to meet at some point. So we want to make sure everything's aligned. So as we move forward, what we have talked about is actually developing two different teams, kind of made up of county staff and then private staff as well, and maybe some of the other agencies that are involved, such as sewer, water, things like that. But basically a technical team to do kind of what you were saying is, does it work? What works? Also looking at the various, there's a lot of environmental constraints out there, and we actually have some new information that very recently that there is a pretty significant culvert that actually crosses pretty amazingly right through the interchange under it and crosses 179th Street a couple times. So there was a meeting just last week with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and the state and county staff to talk about what options there may be there. And the state is currently working on a white paper to kind of outline some different options for discussion. So some of what happens with that will guide some of the actual design work and what will work.
Is that for the interchange piece?
It's mainly for the interchange piece, but it actually could... I know you probably can't see where I'm pointing, but just east of the interchange, it crosses in this area right here. So basically goes from just north of Jolly's across 179th into where Whipple Creek is. And so depending on what they decide, because one of the concepts is rather than have it in its current location, maybe you take it straight across underneath I-5 and come on the north side of 179th. So in that case, maybe a culvert wouldn't be needed there. But if Fish and Wildlife, if that wasn't preferred, then there would be need to be a culvert. So we have to factor that in to the design. Some of the other things that technical team would look at is, obviously, you look at where the bridge is. Very, you know, basically a forested wetland. You also have a lot of impervious area associated with that. And then what are you going to do with the stormwater? You know, obviously you want to make as much use of the developable land as you can and not have stormwater there. So kind of to your point, Councillor Olson, about looking, is this it? You know, and one thing that the team will look at is kind of all the various things, you know, looking at what would the bridge look like, how does it work tying into a roundabout there on 179th is kind of an unusual thing. The interior circulation plan, the overall environmental impacts, stormwater. And one thing, and we've just recently kind of talked about it, is what if you didn't build 15th Avenue? and you instead flew 10th Avenue over 179th Street and made use of all that existing impervious area that you already have, and then be able to potentially tie that in with the interchange work. Now that's something that's it's kind of a new idea that we haven't fleshed out, and I think, like they've said, there is a lot of work to kind of do to make sure this all works. So we want to at least take a look at that and see, because it could potentially accelerate timelines, reduce stormwater size, and eliminate maybe some costs associated with 15th. Obviously, there's a cost associated with 10th. But the environmental constraints there could be expensive to mitigate and take a long time to permit, which both can delay projects. So along with that technical team, we also talked about having, we haven't really come up with some good names for them yet, we'll work on that, but a non-technical team that would focus on kind of the other pieces of it, which are, how do we fund this thing? You know, what does the partnership look like? Do we need to go to the state and make some requests there? And basically more of a higher level group that looks at how does this all come together from a funding and implementation standpoint. And all both of those groups will be a blend of the basically the private and public partnership.
So then with regard specifically to urban holding and your just recent comments about it, is the urban holding piece, the reasonably funded developers agreement, does that all still need to take place before or in conjunction with this?
Before it lifts, yeah.
Before it lifts, but also considering these other options.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think the idea would be to kind of run those processes concurrently. You know, we're going to have some technical information first. Obviously, looking at this, you know, what actually works before you can really look at how do we actually fund it. But we can start some of those discussions and what it might look like, the overall framework, much sooner than we have all the technical information.
And have we as a county, because it was when we did 15th and all of them, streets on the Atlas has been well over 10 years ago, and it's probably due that we look at 179th again. Are we looking at this also of what happens when 72nd comes in and all this other stuff, because that other traffic would come down through here eventually. So, I'm just saying that then the county really has more responsibility in it, because we're taking a lot more stuff eventually that will, you know, benefit from this.
So you're talking circulation from both the county-wide perspective as well as both the detailed area here.
Yeah, a larger view.
From the larger perspective, that circulation plan on the county-wide level is looked at during our comprehensive plan update that was done in 2016, and there were capital facilities plans that were added to the program. So that's been in consideration. As far as looking at the circulation plan, again, with the environmental constraints in mind, that, again, is a docket process that you'll see on several other circulation plans in front of you.
So what's our next steps?
I think pulling the committees together quickly and just continuing on down this path as quickly as we can. This is really just an update for you, and we're in the middle of a process that hopefully we're actually beyond the middle of the process. We're getting right down to the details now, and hope to be back to you with development agreements and ideas for funding and all that in the very near future.
Is there an option of lifting urban holding with a limited use, I guess? Now, you know, we're not flat out putting cars on it, but we are planning and everything else to kind of give you the go-ahead on one piece and try and get this going. Randy, you want to? Come on. I knew you could stay in your seat.
Randy Prince, 805 Broadway. Just a couple of things to add, and one particularly to your question. I was led the charge on Fifth Plank Creek UH removal when we did it in phases, if you remember, and also worked extensively on the North Orchard situation approval. And one of the things about those is there is extensive transportation analysis that went with both of them. It includes background growth and all of those sorts of things. And those analyses included just specific properties initially, much like they did here in terms of the numbers of the capacity that was going to be needed for those. It also created the capacity for others, much like this will. And so you have the ability, both practical and legal ability, to carve out only that much area of UH removal as you choose, based primarily upon the amount of transportation capacity that at least is going to be immediately or reasonably funded through the partnership between the private sector and the public sector. So we've done that in a variety of different cases. But the overall analysis that you're doing includes background growth and things that are going to happen much in the future. And Camas, for example, we just did probably the largest residential project in the county's history, which is a 1,300-unit master plan community with an urban village. We did a 10 to 15-year build-out. It's all of the transportation is done for that. The mitigation measures are identified for that. Urban holding and family move. There are one thing I wanted to touch upon briefly is when we're talking about the implementation of this. One, in Holt's case, what we want to have happen is to provide you with a master plan of how these areas would develop. And the reason for that is on the local jurisdiction side, you want to know, you want some predictability about what's going to go there, how it's going to be laid out in, you know, at a planning level. On the public or on the private side, we have to have some predictability about what we're going to get so that we can give, you know, the appropriate amount of whether it's, you know, how much TIF advancement or how, you know, what's coming from our side. We can't give that to you without having some predictability, some general predictability about what's coming from our side. So Steve and Reed mentioned that'll be the development agreement. So the not only for Killian, but the also needs to be removed from at least the whole side. Otherwise, we couldn't give you the money because we would have no ability to develop the property. So that's all. That's all.
There you go.
Councilman, a question for Heath. There's a time frame suggested in this document, fall 2017, both on the removing the holding and the development agreement. Could you comment on what you know today or Matt,
sure,
on how realistic those time frames are, or best guess of what they could be?
Sure. I think we learned in this conversation there's still a lot of unknowns. The environmental constraints, the technical teams to work it out. Personally, I don't see 2017 as I think directing us to proceed in 2018 would be more appropriate. We have several dockets that we're working on now. Besides the fact, I think 2018 would be more realistic.
Now, were you talking about the entire urban holding or just the Killian piece, Jim?
What was suggested on the document here, the under number two, remove the 40-acre.
Well, I'd rather that we not make any final decisions on that. We've got some things to talk to Matt about next week that we'd like to discuss before we make any decisions on whether that's a 2017 or 2018 project. And I don't think we need to provide that direction quite yet in any event.
I think that is a fundamental component for both your private sector partners that are here. And I'd also add that removal of urban holding is not anywhere close to approval of development. You could remove all of the urban holding out there today, and it would have very little practical effect. The reason for that is you would still have to meet concurrency which you couldn't do. So that's why just slowly removing urban holding, whether you do it or you didn't, as a practical matter, what needs to happen is you need to have some reasonably funded funding sources in place that you can, you know, that you can identify that create that at least regulatory capacity and ultimately real capacity in those areas. But from the private sector, both Killian and Holt need to at least need to be able to have the assurance that that hurdle is over in order for them to, you know, to continue to participate and spend money and so on.
And to further what Randy's saying, most of Killian's property is out of urban holding, but he's not developing yet because, and even though he has trips, he's not developing yet because we really need a larger solution.
I think one of the challenges, as I see it, is that urban holding, we get one shot at it every year, and so we're kind of stuck with this. Either we do it this year or we're pushing another, you know, almost 18 months out. Legally, is there an interim step where we could have some kind of interim developers agreement saying, okay, we're going to lift it from urban holding, but we're not going to do anything more with it until we're closer to where we need to be. Just find something where we don't have to kick it all the way out to the end of 2018.
I think the closest place you can get, and Steve and I have both been involved in a variety of, how many development agreements we've negotiated on issues that are essentially legislative, but maybe 100, a lot. And so I don't think that the county can say in a development agreement that we agree we will remove urban holding before you've actually done the legislative work to accomplish that. What you can do is, and this language you will see, you can find in a variety of development agreements with the county and other local jurisdictions, is the county agrees to exercise best efforts to do X. And I've yet to have a local jurisdiction go sideways on that. Technically, they could, but in 30 years, I've never had that happen. So that's, you know, that helps to answer your question. I think both Steve and I, you know, certainly would prefer that this happen in 17 than in 18. But I want to answer John's question.
For some of that, technically, we. Not totally, I guess, but we did a little of that on 119. Mm-hmm. We did all the developer agreements, and we kind of started the ball rolling, you know, as fast as we could.
I mean, things always take longer than you want, but this process has been going for a long time. And what's happening here, while challenging, is not new. It is not something that actually all the players at this table have not done before, and the county has not done before. So there are lots of blueprints out there, and it for the most part, it becomes sort of a rolling up your sleeves and how much effort are both sides willing to spend to get there.
So I have a couple of logistical questions. So to get reasonably funded, we have to have a developer's agreement in place.
You have to have a funding plan.
Yeah. That's part of that.
You're going to get the commitments on our side through those agreements.
Here you need that because there's a lot of private sector right away and dollars that are coming to the table. You don't normally have to have that.
Right.
Okay. And then we're middle of July. I mean, if we directed, I'm just working through logistical. If we said we really want this in 2017, but we still have to look at funding sources, we still have to nail down a funding plan, we have to have developers agreements in place, and what's the time? I'm just trying to get logistically what, you know, how do we get from here to there in 2017, even if we wanted to?
Give us another week to come back to you.
Okay.
So I think the key is we keep having these work sessions, and this will sound like a 139th, you know, but...
I remember that, too.
But anyway, that's...
And 119th in the original pipeline. And
yeah. But that's how we got things moving.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.